Well, hello, everybody. I just must say this setting seems very strange to me. My favorite students when I was teaching were four-year-olds. And they were always up in my feet all around. I was, you know, there was hardly a place to sit. So now I look at some of you, you seem so far away. And I say, God, I hope they're not communicating what I've said so often, that the proximity to the teacher is an indication of their love or so. I'm kind of in a lonely place tonight. I just got to get used to you being so far away. You seem so far away. Well, several weeks ago, Rhonda had, what's the matter? Oh. Well, you may do that. I would feel very comfortable. What are you going to do with this now? Don't take that away from me.
You want to move a little closer to us?
Oh, well, I could do that. If you're not going to come to me, I'll come to you. How's that? All right, let's go. I got to get up here, though.
Yeah, I
got to
get up.
Maybe you guys can move your chairs up.
Ready? I got to move this thing.
I thought Danny said not to be in the...
This one's got a lock.
He had the camera set to it.
Where's Danny? He's got a...
Is that close enough?
Yeah, is that better?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I don't have to be such a baby.
Is that good,
Todd? But I love you, and I want to be close to you. Oh. So, okay, so much for Danny's very formal beginning. We messed it up already, right? Well, if we didn't now, we would later. So... let's just be real. So God, I thank you. I don't really know what you want to do tonight, but I just know that I'm following what I so sensed that you asked of me today. So God, I'm gonna put it on you. It's all about you and what you want to do. So just God, let me breathe deeply and just sense your presence. We welcome your presence, nothing like your presence, where we can be face to face, eyeball to eyeball. Thank you for being with us. Thank you. Amen. Well, Rhonda mentioned, I started saying this where I got off on that smart track. Rhonda had asked whether I would do some, I think this is significant, listen to the wording. Mim, would you do some mini teachings? And I said, oh, mini teachings. Wonder what that is. But I knew it was supposed to be short, so you'll have to hold me to it. Mini teachings means short. So I guess this is moments with Mim. I don't know what it is. But... many moments with Mim. Oh, she did? Lots of moments. Well, we'll let God decide how this is all going to shake out, but he's changed it about 3 times in the last 2 days, so that's a pretty good average. Today, I felt like he wanted me to go back and give a testimony over a period of time in my life that was very difficult. And I felt that in doing that, he wanted me to stop and say, this is what God taught me through this. This is where I was. This is what he did. This is how we came out of it. I think in our being open and real with one another, we need to share the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I've got all of that in my life. He has, fortunately, he has a way of taking what we are and transforming it and using it for His glory. And I thank Him for doing that. But I'm going to start with my testimony. I don't think there's going to be a lot of teaching tonight, except each one of us is as a book. And each one of us is a testimony of some kind to those about us. So that's what I'm trusting to communicate tonight. There are so many things tied into this phase of my life, and I really want it to be an encouragement, maybe a warning, maybe I don't know what all it might be, but I'm just going to go into it. I'm not going to talk about my whole life. This is just a portion of my life. My husband and I had spent many years pastoring in different churches. In the last church we had built, the building had an amazing group of people that were with us. And in 2001, Marvin had a stroke. That was not in our plan. God used it in his will, but he had a stroke. And for several more years, he continued to pastor, but it was very, very, very difficult. And finally, in 2004, he knew that God was asking him to give up the pastorate. I'd been involved in many things. Most of the time, I was teaching, or I was a principal. I was in education, that's what I should say. I was in education for 20-some years during our time in Saginaw. And pastored alongside him for the last years. We both pastored together. So when he started talking about retiring, I said, man, this is going to be tough for you. He loved getting into messages, into sermons. He loved the people. We had amazing people. And I said, wow, I don't know what you're going to do. Guess what? He was fine. He was great. I was the one that fell apart because my life so revolved around what I did. And so when there was, my goodness, there are no kids to teach, there's no choir to direct, there's no whatever, I began to have this just totally worthless. In fact, that's what the enemy told me day after day after day. See, you're worthless. Well, I was very close to 70 at that time, but my idea was not retirement. I just couldn't even imagine retirement. So this was like a blanket I started to wear. It was like a piece of who I was. I was worthless. I had no value. Look, there was nothing that I was doing. Nothing I was... And it just overcame me. So one morning when I can just see the place right now. I was in the bedroom. I was having my devotions, and there was that demon on my shoulder reminding me that another worthless day was about to take place, right? And of all things, the Spirit of God said, go look up worthless in the dictionary. Now, who of you do not know what worthless means? We all do. But there was a string of words that describe worthless. I think there must have been 30 words. Down at the bottom of the list was one word that triggered my thinking, triggered me as to why the Lord had asked me to look it up. And that word was unfruitful. Right around this time, I don't know exactly how the time frame, but in this period of time that I was going through these feelings of worthlessness and uselessness because I no longer was doing. I'd allowed myself to be a human doing all my life. I was steeped in human doing, lived on a farm. You weren't of much value unless you were a human doing. I remember my mom talking on the telephone. We canned 10 bushels of peaches and washed 40 loads of clothes. And I mean, it was all what we did that made us worthwhile. So it was ingrained, and I picked it up in the spiritual realm, hyper-performance activity. So during this period of time that I was going through this just wretched thing of uselessness, we had a couple prophets that we valued so much in the congregation. And I was not at peace today until I looked through my files and found the words, the prophetic words. One was given in August of 2003, and the other was given about a year later, I think. So here's the portion that I was going to read to you, and there's a reason for my being led to share this. Paul Keith Davis, he's on YouTube. A lot of you can see him very, very often. He told me that I wasn't going to read. I'm not reading all this, and I thought I marked what I wanted to read. He said, I see one thing with my natural eyes, but it's something else with my spiritual eyes. While Mim was praying, I was seeing Corrie Ten Boom. I'm glad you know her, because that's a great honor, and what that meant to me, and it may mean many things, was that when she talked about God, this is what I hung on to. When she talked about God, it was not from something she read in a book or that she heard from someone else. When she talked about him, she knew him. And she talked about him from an experiential point of view. I saw that in you, ma'am. I saw that you're going to share from an experiential point of view, and that what you're going to begin to share, you're going to know, because he's going to reveal some things to you. He'll visit with you just like he did with her. And so he prayed that over me. And the last part of the prayer, and I'm sharing this with you because of how it ties in with what I mentioned about the worthlessness bit. Lord, great fruitfulness. Fruitfulness. I see abundant fruit. I see the Lord coming to gather the fruit from you brought forth for the harvest. The Lord is looking to you for fruit. Bring it forth. Bring it forth in Jesus' mighty name. So when I came to the end of that worthless list and saw the word unfruitful, it's like, there's an aggravating fly. It was like it triggered within me that I had been allowing the enemy to have such a heyday in my life, such just allowing him to cause me to succumb to that title, in a sense, that he had given me. So I did some major damage with the devil that morning, and that was a turnaround in my life. That's a lesson I want to imprint upon you. And the same thing happened just lately with some of the illness I've been. I said, I've been given too much attention to the enemy. So rise up in that place that God has placed you. Do warfare if you need to. Find out who the enemy is. Don't allow yourself to be defined by your weaknesses and by your limitations. And so I hung on to that. I did battle with that prophetic word that I had. Instead of being worthless, no, God, you've told me that you want me in my older years to bear fruit, to bear much fruit. And I'm not going to be doing that, sitting around whining because the enemy's telling me I'm worthless. So take those, take the prophetic words that God gives you, take them seriously. Take them. I've heard so many wonderful words that Danny and Rhonda have released over many, many of you sitting right here. Get those out. Man, I had these in a folder. They were about to rot from 2003 that I could find them. That was a miracle because I'm not the best record keeper. So I got those out again today, and I rejoiced in them because this is a period, this is another season. I've been weakened. I can't physically do what I'm accustomed to doing and what gives me such great joy. And so I really have to allow the Lord to show me that my value is not in my productivity physically, in what I do. The other word that was given to me a couple years later by Bobby Connor. Probably many of you know Bobby Connor. He's all over the place, the big teddy bear that has such a soft heart. And Bobby told me, he said, the Lord loves dancing with you. Every time he came, he wanted to dance with me, and I think he was trying to shake off a religious spirit that was there. So he said, I'll tell you what he's going to do for you. Hosea 2, 12 and 14. I was going to look that up. I don't need to. It's where God takes Hosea out, or teaches through Hosea, takes out in the wilderness. And I said, God, you got to be kidding. I'm already there and I don't like it. But it was a different kind of wilderness. It was a quiet place. It was a heart-to-heart place. He's going to speak to you real good. You've been wanting to hear him real clear. He says, I'm going to speak to you heart-to-heart. Your best days are ahead, not behind. She's going to be, and then he told the congregation, she's going to be caught away in the wilderness with the Lord. And here's what it says in Hosea, part of what it says. I will allure you out to the wilderness and speak comfortably to you. The Hebrew says, I will communicate with you heart to heart. It's a wilderness experience to where he's going to speak heart to heart. I can handle that one. You see, the wilderness is not a bad place. It's a place of his choosing. So he's going to be separating you out to himself in a good way, not a bad way. Isn't that something? She'll come out of the wilderness with a word. I couldn't imagine having a word. Dry as a bone. Nothing alive within me. I couldn't imagine a word, much less a fresh word. But that was the word of the Lord, and it was tied in very much with the other word about being fruitful. And so I began to stand on that. God, you're telling me that you're going to speak comfortably to me. I'm here. I've got time. I ain't got nothing to do. That's been bothering me, and you know that. But here I am. I got all this time. Speak to me. Shortly after that, these two prophets were there. I was down in the, I had a big study on the lower level. Danny and Rhonda slept there when they came to Saginaw. It's a bedroom as well. And I reached up on a top shelf that I'd not gotten anything off of for months, probably. I reached up on the top shelf and pulled down a 20-set old cassette tapes album by Mike Bickle on the Song of Solomon. I had at some other time, I don't know how much before that, it had been quite some time, I'd started those tapes and I got to tape 3 and I had taken notes on the tapes. Instead of starting over after all that time, which is what I would normally do, I flipped in, I think it was tape 4, the next one, and on that tape, for whatever reason, he gave an overview of the whole book of Song of Solomon. I said, God, that's me. That's you. You're my beloved. You're the bridegroom. I'm that maiden. I'm that poor maiden that's in all of these situations. That's me. I got so drawn in to the message. I'm in the wilderness, right? He's speaking comfortably to me. He's wooing me. And I listened to that tape, and that started me on a journey. Those suckers were long. I continued to listen and listen and listen, not only once, but twice. Remember, I had nothing to do, right? I'm worthless because I have nothing to do. I was doing exactly what it was that he wanted me to do, get out of that place, that pity party, and get moving. So I listened to those tapes. I ordered online the syllabus. My gracious, those things took up three huge notebooks, the biggest notebooks you can find. There were three of those. They're in my belongings at the house, and I still refer to them. Three notebooks on eight chapters of the Song of Solomon. I listened to him a couple times, took voluminous notes, went through his notes, practically memorized it. And then I said, well, I'm a little tired of Mike Bickle. Wonder who else has something to say about this. So, Mike, please, Mike, forgive me. I wasn't tired of you. I just was looking for something fresh, you know, something else. So I went online, and I saw this book, The Bride, by Rhonda Calhoun. Rhonda Calhoun, I've never heard of Rhonda Calhoun. And by now, I knew enough about the Song of Solomon that many people approach it from a worldly viewpoint, and it becomes a sex manual, whatever you want to call it. And I wanted to avoid going down that alley. So I said, well, Mike Bickle's not going to lead me astray. And he'd written an introduction for the book. So I ordered my first copy of The Bride. And I probably was lost for a few weeks as I immersed myself in that book. Whatever transformation was missing out of Mike's tapes and all the other stuff that went with it was in The Bride. I have read The Bride, the entire book, eight times, and much of it many more times. Next to the Bible, it's been the most life-changing book in my life, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And so I was into that book, and then I texted or I called Rhonda, never heard of her, didn't know anything about her, was fascinated by what she did, and told her how life-changing that book was to me, and how it impacted my life, changed my direction totally. It happened as the two prophets had said, well, particularly Bobby, about going out into the wilderness and getting a new message. Man, I had a new message all at once. All at once I had something to do. But it wasn't because I was looking for something to do, right? It was because I was so full of the beauty and the message, the beauty of Jesus. Oh, I knew all about Jesus, but I sure didn't know him very well. It's a pastor's wife. I didn't know him. I could teach, I mean, give me something that I could study for a while. I could teach it all, but I couldn't tell you how it related to me too much. So, I started sharing with everybody. And Danny knows that because I called for books and then some more books and then some more books. And then I taught a class, and then that was some more books. And during the class, I got a letter from Rhonda, got a letter from Harvest Home. Hey, heaven's getting ready for a wedding, and we'd like you to come to a retreat that's going to be held in Kansas City. I think it was May of 2007. Does that sound about right? Randy, you remember notes, Danny. Was it 2007? Six? was going to be at a retreat place, and man, we'd like for you to come. Well, being a bit enthusiastic, a little more than a bit, I went to class that night, and I said, guess what? Rhonda's going to have a, she's going to have a retreat. I got the letter today, and it gives us the dates, and it says there's just room for 100 people. And so I said, you know what? This place is going to fill up in a hurry. So I got about 5 people, and we made arrangements to fly to Kansas City, and we had this awesome time at the retreat, and it was another piece of my transformation. It was, it was way beyond what I could have ever asked for. It was not until we moved to the farm that Rhonda and I were talking about that. And she said, you know, ma'am, that was meant as an invitation to you. We were praying over what women to invite to this retreat. And I took all these extra people. But she was too, you know Rhonda, she was too nice. She said, well, we just decided they were the ones God wanted to be there. Bit by bit, transformation. God led me to teach a morning Women in the Word group full of all kinds of women from every kind of church, racial orientation, wonderful. Then I started incorporating the things I was learning about God encounters, and then we started a Friday evening group. And in the Friday evening group was a pastor's wife who attended the morning group, but now she brought her husband. And she said, my husband has been looking for something that's real, that he can really get a hold of in terms of the beauty of God, the greatness of God. They came every Friday night. They did not, they told all their parish, no, nothing on Friday night. We're going to get filled with God. And it was through them that Danny and Rhonda were invited to Saginaw. A Church of Christ pastor, which was a part of Rhonda and Danny's past, you just told us, was it ever? No, it was just two of us. You were talking about the Church of Christ. It wasn't everybody. And Rhonda said, I've been praying for years that I'd be invited to a Church of Christ where I could speak with the freedom that I have found in the Lord and share it with others. So when Ken, that was the pastor, made arrangement for them to come, Ken said, may they stay at your house? Well, we didn't have to pray about that one very long. They stayed at our house. And the second night they were there, Rhonda was eating a bowl of Cheerios around the kitchen island. And Marvin, this was not like Marvin, especially after he had the stroke. It would have been more something I would have done. But Marvin said, Rhonda, would you and Danny please pray about what the next step is? Here we live in this 3,300 square feet house. He couldn't do very much. We just knew that God was pricking us to get out of the nest to make some dramatic changes. We didn't know it, and Rhonda wouldn't tell us, but the night before, she and Danny, you correct me if anything I'm saying here is not accurate. She and Danny the night before had both said, they both felt that God was speaking to them and saying, I want you to invite Marvin Mim to the farm. That was the last thing. Although when I went to that retreat and took a whole bunch of people that weren't invited with me, I brought back some literature and a little DVD, and I said, Marv, would you look at this? Maybe we could go help them on the farm for a few weeks in the summer or something like that. Well, he didn't have this, he didn't have quite the same unction I did because he wasn't involved in the same way. But that was where the seed of our being here on the farm. I want to stop here and say that what happens in our lives, we can so look back and say, God, thank you that we said yes to you at this point. Some of us said no, and we can still thank him because he finds us on the detours. But it's so important, so very important, that as much as possible, we are eating from the tree of life, and we know what it is he's asked us to do. There were a series of yeses that I made all through my journey, on this part of my journey, that led up to the actual move to the farm. God has his ways of doing things that he chooses to do, and he might have found another way, but he chose to use that way, and we chose to cooperate with him. And you all have a story about how you got here to the farm, whether you're a resident or not, or someone on staff. But I just want to encourage you that, yes, the decisions we make today have lifelong impact. And any one of you can give testimony about how that all works. Rambling on. So God gave many opportunities to minister during that time. I did a couple retreats. Oh, it was so fun to see people get a hold of the story of the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the greatest husband that ever was. And it was just such a delight. So that's a part of my story that I wanted to share with you tonight. And the Song of Songs has continued to impact me after these years, because it was about in 2004 when I first got acquainted with it. It has continued to impact me. And I felt like he wanted me to share in the weeks ahead, whenever we have a time that I'm supposed to share. It will be out of those early mornings that I spent for about 8 months getting up early and getting into the Song of Songs in a depth, not the tapes I listened to, not the books I read and all that, but get into the depths by taking, not verse by verse, sometimes just a piece of a verse. It took about 8 months, and I journaled all that I learned from other people and put it all in one place. And I felt he said, that's what I want you to share with our father's farm. So and I think the timing, God is so into the right timing. What have we been talking about here recently? What are we surrounded with? What is it that's out there in the world right now that would cause us to say, God, we need to establish that intimate place with you more than we have ever needed it? We talk about the bride making herself ready. We talk about the last days. We talk about from day to day what's going to be, you know, what's going to be our lot. We don't know that. But I feel very confident of one thing, that if I don't know in my knower who he is and how it affects who I am, there will be opportunities to deny him. There will be opportunities to not continue to be faithful. So I feel if there's ever a time we need to get into that place. No, it isn't a sissy book. Some people would have us to believe just a human love. It talks about, yeah, it has that level, but it has so many levels. And I dare anybody, this is a kind of a naughty part of me coming out here. You won't believe that. I thought today, I said, how could anybody think that the Song of Solomon is just a mere story about human love? Yes, it is that. Thank God it is that. But I wrote down a verse and imagined a couple going out for a nice romantic evening, a date night, and the guy's looking for something different to affirm his wife and tell her how much he loves her. So women, how would you like this to be said about you? This is what Yeshua said to the maiden, because he loved her so much and he admired her so much, but the meaning of it is not what we first see. Your navel is like a round goblet, which never lacks mixed wine. Oh, honey, and your belly is like a heap of wheat set about with lilies. How many gals you think would leave that date just thrilled? Thrilled, thrilled, thrilled. But what Yeshua, what the bridegroom was telling the bride was one of the most wonderful affirmations you could imagine. It would sound something like this. Your navel is like a round goblet. That's what I just said. The navel is how mothers nourish their babies. And it speaks here of her inner life. He was telling her, wow, what's on the inside of you? You have been nurtured so beautifully. You are so healthy. Nothing malnourished about you. You never lacked in spiritual growth and preparation. That I so admire that about you. When he talks about her belly, he's talking about she's pregnant with the harvest. We ought to all have bellies that are a round goblet and never mixed with wine, a heap of wheat fenced around with lilies. Wheat with lilies, oh, that is weird, isn't it? So it's that talks, lilies are believers. And so this is kind of a warning. If any of you get into the book, few of you could get into it for the first time because we've had it taught many, many, many different times. But if you get into the book yourself, be sure you're loaded with what the symbolism means. There's 50 words in the Song of Solomon that's nowhere else in the Bible. And just like these few verses here, your rounded belly, a goblet, a bunch of wheat with lilies, doesn't make a lick of sense unless you have some understanding about it. So, short evening that night, the guy that tried to use the Song of Solomon oh God, this is too crazy. Oh, too crazy. Where are we? I don't know. How do we get this train back on the track? What do we do here? Well, the point is that, yes, you do need some help sometimes in getting that symbolism explained. So anybody have any questions? I'm sure that I'll be doing a lot of is inviting you to participate. I look out on a Friday, the way everybody works so hard here on the farm, I look out on a Friday evening group and the poor folk trying to keep their eyes open to get out of here to get back home to bed. I mean, it's pretty bad sometimes. anybody have anything they want to, any kind of response? Okay, we're going to, you coming, Danny? This is going to be a pay-as-you-go teaching. And I don't know where that came from either. I think it's time for me. I think it's time for me to stop. I'm going to share my heart. I'm going to share what God gave me. And whenever it's time to quit, then we quit there and we pick it right up the next time. And some of you were in the home group where we did the book of John, and we kept saying Jesus would come before we got through the book. And it's probably true because we're still not through it. And we've dissolved, so I'm sure he will come before we finish it. But with this, if one verse takes five sessions, you know, that's going to take a while, even eight chapters. But it's a heart book. It is such a heart book. So we won't win any prizes for speeding, none whatsoever. So I felt like I really didn't want to get into the teaching part tonight, just kind of give an introduction, if that's okay. Because you could be here a while. I could be. We could be going through this for a while. So let's just thank him. Let's just pray. God, I thank you that at whatever stage we are, you don't give up on us. I thank you that even when we're weak and we look back and we say, well, why did I let the enemy play so foolishly with me? I thank you that you're a God who looks at all that and you say, you know, even in your foolishness, even in your thoughtlessness, even in your weakness, man, I love you. In fact, you're my very favorite one. So don't be discouraged. Use those times. I feel like he's telling us, don't be discouraged at those times you don't act in accordance with the level of maturity you think you have. He's saying sometimes you need to come to those places so that you can see your dependence has to be totally upon me, because in yourself you're puny, you're weak. But that has nothing to do with my straining my love for you. I love you all the more, and I want to be what you cannot possibly be. And so, Father, I thank you that regardless of our age, regardless of how long we have known you, and regardless of all those things, that you remain faithful. Your love never fails. It never gives up. Never runs out on us. So tonight, just impress us with the truth of your love, with the truth of your affections. One of the first things that the maiden is going to ask of you is that you kiss her with the kisses of your mouth. The kisses of your mouth are speaking out the words of God along with a lot of other things. But Father, help us to position ourselves. If we're going to receive those kisses, we got to be facing you. We can't have our backs turned and grumble and complain and we're mad at you half of the time because you didn't treat us right. No, we have to be facing you. We have to say, God, I don't have it all together. Help me fill in the blanks. But I certainly love you, and I want everything you have for me and for those about me. So truly, God, I'm serious. Would you kiss me with the kisses of your word? Your words give life. Your words give beauty. Your words speak love. So tonight, as we lie there in our beds awaiting sleep, give us a picture of what it means to enjoy those kisses from you. Draw us unto yourself. draw us, and then we'll partner with you. Yep, and you'll bring us into your innermost chambers. Thank you for this night together.